Welcome to Crying Out Cloud, the podcast that will make you laugh, cry, and reconsider all of your cloud security fears. I'm Eden from the CTO team at Wiz, and I'm here with my amazing co-host, Amitai, from the Wiz Threat Research Team. And today we're super duper excited to have a very special guest, Kat Traxler. Kat is a security pro whose expertise lies in cloud research, security architecture, and penetration testing. She's presented at conferences like SANS CloudSec Next and Ford CloudSec, and she's a lead author of SEC 549, Enterprise Cloud Security Architecture, a cyber security certification course. So welcome, Kat.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Amitai. Thanks, Eden. Thanks, all the listeners. Cool to be here.
We're super pumped.
Yeah, we're really very glad to have you here.
Where are you calling from? Where are you right now?
I'm in Minneapolis. It's unusually sunny right now. I feel like, you know, 1,000 kilowatts of sun is shining down on me. We have two seasons here, winter and summer, and the switch has flipped. It is now full summer.
It sounds like you have like a podcast spotlight. The sun's like,
yeah, exactly.
She's being recorded.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. So we like to do this thing when we have guests before we dive in deep, or we do a speed round of questions so people get to know you a little bit.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Okay. What's your favorite cloud or security Twitter account to follow?
Oh, favorite cloud or a security Twitter. I mean, like, I love my whole feed, right? It's really curated. Like, I love Aiden's. If I'm not having fun, like, I feel like I should just hang up what I'm doing now and go be a Walmart greeter personally. So, like, I love Aiden's Twitter because there's usually some joy in what he does. And that's not necessarily, like, not everything that he tweets is, like, the most security impactful and, like, the biggest O-day that he's dropping, but you can tell he's having fun doing it, and there's joy and there's fun. So I'm gonna just say, like, I really love Aiden. I can send you a link so you can put it in your show notes.
I'm guessing a lot of our followers already follow him, but just in case they don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you a dog, cat, lizard, or bird person?
I have two dogs.
And you are welcome to interpret that question as meaning, you know,
right?
Are you a person who is a bird?
Yes.
Or do you have birds?
Yes. In a past life, I was a lizard. No. I'm going to have two dogs, specifically two dachshunds. So I suppose that qualifies me as a dog person. But I've also had cats my whole life. I'm just an animal person. Like, I love animals. I love nature. And they're much easier to get along with than humans. So I would say all of the above.
I'm not sure you would be a very good Walmart greeter, though, if you don't like
people. No, I'd be awful. I'd be awful at it, but it is an option if all else fails.
Oh, it's on the table.
Yeah.
How did you get into cloud security?
By happenstance, I suppose. And I was working in web app penetration testing, so my first love was applications and breaking them. Yes, my first love was software and then breaking the software and then, you know, just sort of noticing that, like, nobody was doing anything about this thing called the cloud that we were in. You know, asking around, like, is anybody on that? Nobody's on it. Can I be on it? So that's the advice I give to a lot of people who are looking to break in. Like, look at your current organization. Is there anybody doing it? Is there gaps? Like, it was just like a big gap that nobody was doing, and they were excited that somebody seemed to want to do it.
I wonder what other fields of work you could describe as I loved it and I love breaking it.
yeah, I mean, like, not car mechanic, not That'd be a weird thing for like a lawyer, but that might apply.
If you were a vulnerability, what would be your vulnerability name?
Mary Poppins. That's like always been my motto around just like security, communication, like firm but kind. So like my vulnerability would be severe. My vulnerability would have high impact, but it would be kind. So there would be nothing mean about it. So it'd be like, you know, 9.8 on a CVSS, but like everybody would be like, but she was nice.
Like easy to fix. No long term damage.
No long term damage. Everybody was like, well, that was nice. Mary Poppins.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
A couple of things. Like I wanted to be a rock climber. And I also wanted to own a video rental store. Those are my two second grade 7-year-old goals.
Did you spend a lot of time in like Blockbuster?
I did actually, yes. And I did work for Blockbuster briefly. That was like a job of mine when I was, I had a long string of strange teenage jobs. One of them was working for a video rental place, and I still have an odd collection of VHSs and a weird love for like outdated media. So yeah, I mean, video rental store was kind of my thing. Like I was, I spent a lot of time alone as a child because everybody was like working and doing other things. And so I was just like on my own, left to my own devices often. And sometimes I was just watching endless streams of VHSs, and I was like, I'm going to own a video rental store. That's like a great plan. Maybe 30 years ago it was.
But, yeah. I mean, also going to Blockbuster was one of the most fun activities in the world. So like, right.
Indeed. Yeah. You got your popcorn, you got your like Big Mike and Ike's.
I think like Netflix could do a lot to simulate that. Like they could make like random things like unavailable, and like, just like, there are too many people watching this right now. You know, you have to wait a week until they bring it back. Or like show other people browsing at the same time as you.
Yeah.
And then like you could leave comments for each other and stuff.
Okay.
Oh, who's this?
Oh, this is Baby Yan. She insisted she will insist on coming into the show, or she will start singing. So I feel that she wants to make a cameo.
We could do a musical episode. We haven't done one of those yet.
So cute. Okay. Your handle is sometimes Nanook. What is that?
You know how at DEF CON you have to get a handle and people like will give it to you? That's kind of a thing, right? Like you have to have a hacker name. And that was given to me by a friend when I was proclaiming my love for cold weather and proclaiming how much I love to like romp in the snow and ski and just be out on the ice. She's just like, oh, you're just like Nanook of the North. So that's how that came about. And I would much prefer to just like layer up in like piles of wool than be hot. Hot is not good.
Solid. Okay. That was fun. Let's jump into the more serious part of this. Okay. So your work involves something that sounds super cool, threat modeling. And I think it would be awesome if you could share with people what this means and what this looks like.
Yeah. So if you ask like 10 different people what threat modeling is, you're going to get like 10 different answers. I think it's also going to be completely different. Threat modeling is going to be completely different for people in like an enterprise who want to threat model a service or threat model process. For me, when I do threat modeling, it's about going into a cloud service, taking a look at all of the available actions, APIs, methods, breaking down all of the capabilities and functions, and then mapping known threats to every capability, and then layering on controls to those threats in like this really nice, organized way that people then can consume in their threat modeling activity. So I don't necessarily threat model, but I put together the information to help people do their threat modeling. I do like the research and the knowledge for people to then use in their threat modeling activities.
You build a sort of threat modeling language.
Exactly. Yeah. I've like jovially called it like a subscription to my brain, where it's like, what are all the things that I know about the capabilities of this service, the bad things that can happen, mapped to each individual API, what you can do about it, what you can turn off, what controls you can layer on, how good are those controls at mitigating the risks, how hard are those controls, what are all the things that I know about that service? And I will tell you in this very predictable, organized way for you to consume to help you use it in a safe way.
And how machine readable is that? Like, how machine readable is your subscription to your brain?
Full JSON. I would have argued for a YAML, but it's full JSON. So and there's a UI that can be layered on top, or that is layered on top, that subscribers can utilize, but the JSON output then can be dumped into whatever tooling you have to then take into downstream processes. Or if you love PDFs, just rock the PDF. Because well, everybody loves
big,
a PDF.
Big fan of PDF. Big fan of PDF.
Yeah.
So do you happen to use like a threat modeling approach in your personal life? Like, do you threat model like running out of dog food or like burglaries or being too cold?
Yeah, like what's my risk tolerance? That's what you're asking. How risk tolerant am I? I mean, I think everybody who's in security is like always calculating those things about like, what's my risk tolerance to this in a way that like the normies aren't doing, you know, like when COVID came around, like it was like, well, we're doing a risk calculation right now. That's what this is. All this is like risk tolerance calculations. I think people in security like understood that we're going to have to constantly be revisiting this risk tolerance calculation, and we're completely okay with people having different risk tolerance because they're in a different position. I think it's something that's baked into your personality at a certain point where you're just always thinking about it.
Okay, you recently released a tool called DERF.
DERF.
DERF. Which is you described as it attacks as a service, which side note, we thought about it and we're really happy you didn't abbreviate it as AAAS. But can you tell us a bit about it? And if someone listening like wants to run to adopt this, like who is the target audience for using this?
You know, DERF was the third iteration of the acronym. They wouldn't let me use AAS. They wouldn't let me use DERP. So DERF is what it was. So, I mean, all good tools start with like a personal use case, right? Like there's a thing I needed to do that current tooling didn't work with. And so I needed to codify attacks into the cloud, codify them into code, as opposed to just writing them down on my wiki, here's what you do. It's a really great training tool. It's a really good tool to generate logs, to generate samples, to show people like how these attacks are performed just at an API level. It's one thing to write a blog post, to describe it, to put out a PDF. It's another thing to just codify those actions. And so that's what I needed. I was the author of some of these attacks, and then I had a slew of people who needed to then execute them who were less technical. And we needed to operate on the same language and on the same code base and on the same source of truth. The previous solution was like passed around Python scripts, which I don't need to tell you, did not scale. This was an awful solution. So I came to put together this like large Python library. This large Terraform deployment, this large Terraform module that deployed up the infrastructure and then leveraged some PaaS solutions in GCP to execute the attacks. That's all it is, really.
It kind of reminds me of kind of like tools like Nucle, where you're basically sort of trying to create like a standard library of attack templates, essentially.
Yeah. I've never heard of Nucle.
Oh, so it's like a network security tool. It's sort of like open sourcing it's an open source repository of templates that people can use as part of like pen testing or network scanning, stuff like that.
So it's a library that you can like import into your other code base.
Yeah. Although they use YAML. So I don't know if that would be I don't know if that would match with your brain, which works on JSON.
No, my brain very much works on YAML. All of the attacks in the dirt endure for YAML.
Oh, because you mentioned before that your subscription is JSON based.
Well, I don't have any control over that. This predates my brain.
Okay, all right.
So if I had my way, it would be YAML.
Okay.
Your work brings you face to face with a lot of dangerous security mistakes. Like, you get to see a lot of things. I would love to hear you talk about where you feel that people are making the most mistakes, like what areas of cloud architecture and application architecture are most prone to flaws and misconfigurations.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that I think about. It's like the lift and shift folks, like the ones who just don't like take into account the cloud control plane and just kind of think about the network layer, and they think about, well, what are my open ports, you know? And like, if I have my open ports on lockdown and if I know what my ingress egress is, like, I'm good to go. And don't think about like all of the additional attack service. You just get like along for the ride. I was thinking about it yesterday of like, there's some vulnerabilities where the vulnerability only shows up if you specifically use that capability. If you use that capability, you are at risk for potential misconfiguration. But then there's other things where just the fact that you're stepping into the cloud, you don't even have to use it. Just the fact that it exists. The fact that you exist and they exist means that it can be exploited. I think it's all of those things that are just like hidden risks for people who do the lift and shift and don't realize all of the additional attack surface of the cloud control plane that comes along for the ride.
Do you ever see like the other way around? Like, do you think there's a sort of type of cloud customer who's like has identity on lockdown, but their network side isn't as well maintained?
Oh, interesting. I haven't personally seen it, but I absolutely believe it could be. Like, I think that there's like, is there like a theory that like zero trust is just we can ditch the network and then just like all we have to do is identity, and then we could just put everything on the internet and everything will be great? So I can imagine that happens, right? It happens where people have this theory that zero trust means that we have no network controls and we just care about identity. And as long as we do identity, perfect. Everything will be great. And it's just like doesn't work out well. I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it happens.
So we should be on the lookout for that. Maybe that's a good subject for a forward CloudSec talk.
Yeah, right. Like, putting just being like YOLO on your network controls and just assume that like identity is like 100% good all of the time.
YOLO on your network controls is an amazing title for yourself.
Yeah.
Speaking of talks, you once gave a talk at B-Sides about how the cloud breaks the OSI model that most people have in their heads. First of all, for those that are not familiar, will you explain like what the OSI model is and then why the cloud breaks it, and then kind of tell us a little bit more about that, because it's super interesting.
Oh, wait, so the OSI model is just like this like way to understand a network stack, and it goes down from like the lowest levels of just like packets being routed between routers to, you know, TLS all the way up through layer 7, which is like the presentation layer. So it actually goes from like the physical layer of technology all the way up to layer 7, which is your HTTP classic presentation web layers. And the talk that I've iterated on it a few times, and it's targeted at like your classic classic security architects, classic network defender folks, and it's meant to emphasize the amount of configurations and controls of the technology stack, of that whole stack that's brought up to layer 7. So classically, people just think of layer 7 as like bringing you your web form and bringing you your presentation layer, but how much of that, of those APIs in layer 7 can control your network configurations, can control the routing of your packets, can control ingress and egress. Just really how much functionality and capability is now at layer 7 and why you have to really hyper-focus there.
So do you think that since you gave this talk, like, would you give this talk today? Like, do you feel like it's become more obvious, or do you think that people still have this misconception?
I mean, I've iterated it on a few times, and I've refined it. I've given it as recently as a year ago to the right audience. Like, it's a very audience dependent talk that it can hit really well to the right folks. To other more cloud fluent folks, it's like tell me something I don't know, right? Like, but to the right folks, it's like whoa, like, because there's like, I mean, still there's a lot of like, why should I care about the controls of the cloud? I'm gonna care about the lower level, because nothing can happen without that. Nothing can happen without, you know, I'm gonna just manage my router. And if I have my router on lockdown, nothing else matters, right? You can just let the rest go. I mean, there's certainly still that mentality around. We're making progress. But to the right audience, it can be really, really eye-opening.
I think like one of the main things that are like very, I think it's very well known among cloud practitioners at this point. But I do think it can be somewhat surprising to people who aren't as familiar with that world, is the like the power of SSRF in the cloud, in terms of like dropping from the application layer down to the control plane layer.
Yeah, like moving between planes is always like, well, it's that point of inflection, right? The point of inflection between two trust zones, between two systems, is always like the interesting part. Like you said, the SSRF, RCE, between how an application layer vulnerability can then impact the cloud. Very cool inflection point. I mean, and that inflection points in general are fascinating places to look for vulnerabilities. Even when you're just looking at like applications, like when you're looking at between like where two frameworks have to interopt, right? Where you have to switch from HTTP to WebSockets. Anything between that inflection point is like ripe for abuse, ripe for misconfiguration. It's the fun part.
I think like this is what we're talking about right now is like a very interesting large field that are can continue to be researched and explored. But there's also this like list of ideas that I might butcher their names, but Daniel Greslak and Rami McCarthy were talking about as like potential for CloudSec talks. And I was wondering, like, in the same vein of what we're talking about, what do you think are like some of the more promising unexplored research avenues in cloud security at the moment? Like, if there's something more niche that you think should be looked at.
I'm not telling you. I'm gonna tell you guys my neat. No, just kidding.
We're really good at keeping secrets, Kat. We promise.
Oh, like anybody who knows me knows I'm like hyper focused on identity, right? And like I'm hyper focused on the machine accounts. I'll go that far. I love the interplay between consumer and customer owned zones and CSP owned zones, where the single tenant and the multi-tenant zones interrupt. I love the connections that have to be made between the two, both from a network layer and from an identity layer. So, I mean, this goes into some of your research, Amitai, around like multi-tenant systems. And I think Google does a fantastic, better job than most. Better job than most around securing their multi-tenant systems. However, necessarily, there has to be connections between multi-tenant systems and these single consumer systems. And how do you have visibility into those? Generally, it's either the network layer or the identity layer. So I often will look at, going for the high impact, I will look at the thought process of how do I have visibility into any of that multi-tenant systems? You know, those systems that make systems of systems. Yes, that's right. The systems of systems, what necessarily connections have to be there, and how do we gain visibility either from identity layer, network layer? There's a few ideas floating around, but that's what I love in cloud is making for those high impact multi-tenant things.
So if you were recommending people to search their souls for ideas for potential research areas, so looking sort of at the meta layer of like how do various systems interact with each other?
Yeah,
that might be a good opportunity.
Yeah. And also made me think, like, how do things have to work? Like, one of my favorite. Like, ground truth is like, there is no magic. Like, because if you think that a cloud provider creates this environment for you by magic, then, well, we should just go home. Santa Claus comes by and makes this for you. There's no magic. System of a system making this for you. And there has to be connections. Now, can you have visibility into that? I don't know. Maybe not. Come up with some strategies around it. Come up with some theories and then like go through it.
I feel like AWS Santa Claus is a plausible service name to replace the recently deprecated AWS Snowmobile or something.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a service, internal at least, minimal.
Yeah, we might not know about it. And if you were to like look back, I think it's interesting, right? Like we hear now kind of where your head and mind is at, but like what formed you kind of getting to this? Was that like a project that you had look back in your trajectory as a researcher and be like, this really shaped my work, or like I did this and I was like, yes, this is absolutely the direction I'm going in?
So there was like a, I don't know if this shaped my like cloud trajectory, but it definitely shaped my like the way I work. Everybody's got a system, everybody's got a way they work. And this one paper definitely shaped like the way I do things. And it was from 2012. It was called, it was a Unix paper called On Breaking SAML. And it's this paper about breaching SAML.
Now, surprise!
It's super fundamental and foundational. It's like 15 pages. I've killed a lot of trees printing it out. Not cloud related per se. It's a paper about attacks on XML, basically. But this paper was very fundamental in like formatting of like, how do I learn stuff? Like, you print it out, you get some paper, you start writing it down, you start breaking it down until you understand at a deep level how it works, and then you can teach somebody else. And then only then can you really do the thing. So to this day, like if I have some really critical foundational piece of work and print it, oh, you see the printer. Yay, there's the printer.
Or a printer in 2024. I love it.
Or print it out. I take notes. I mark it up, because if you don't understand like XML attacks and practically how to perform them, you're never going to be able to be a good, you know, penetration tester. You're never going to be able to perform your job duties unless you really understand this 15-page esoteric paper. So that once I was able to have success at that technique of learning, I was like, all right, well, this is what I do now.
That's super cool. I feel like, first of all, here's my pen and paper. I always have pen and paper. I'm always writing. I have to like write it down to mentally process it. But yeah. I think it's so cool because so much is always happening around the cloud and these tools and these techniques and new services. And like, you have to have your technique for like continuing to sponge it up and understand it and then be able to like quickly call to action to start using it. So I think it's like, if you're listening and it's like, what is your personal tool to be able to keep taking in new knowledge?
I draw a lot of pictures too.
Do you? Are you a good drawer, or is it like only you can tell what you drew?
Yeah, I mean, it's just about like, you know, an XML attack, right? You have to like, how could you understand that without drawing a picture of it? How could you understand it without making some sort of diagram? It's not pretty, but it codifies it in my brain.
So we wanted to ask if you had anything that you wanted to hype up our listeners about.
Oh, anything to hype up? Not really. Like I told you, like my nickname used to be Mary Poppins, right? So I'm just like, you know, go outside, guys. Like,
touch grass.
Go outside, pet a dog. That's my advice, right? There's all sorts of cool cloud security things coming up. Obviously, there always are. But yeah, go and get 5 minutes of nature today.
Kat, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah. We're really happy and grateful that we got to hear from you and talk to you. So thank you. That is all for this episode of Crying Out Cloud, presented by the cloud security company Wiz. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and share a link to the podcast, but not your cloud keys. And as always, if your cloud security strategy is making you cry, don't worry, just cry out cloud.